Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. A K-12 curriculum designed by Pueblo education leaders in New Mexico aims to counter what they say are significant gaps in how students learn the state's history. The lessons incorporate indigenous wisdom in social studies, health, math, and other subjects, and includes teacher training. Coming up this hour, we'll discuss the Centuries of Pueblo Impact curriculum. That's right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Biden administration is announcing steps to protect Chaco Canyon. Tribes have cultural, historical, and spiritual ties to the area in northwest New Mexico. Tribes in New Mexico and Arizona have long advocated for protection of the sacred area from development. Congress has passed legislation to temporarily put a hold on new leasing. President Biden is announcing that the Department of the Interior is taking steps to protect Chaco Canyon and the greater connected landscape. Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland talked about the Interior Department's plan in a press call with reporters Sunday.
In the coming weeks after the president's announcement, the Department of the Interior will begin consideration of a 20-year withdrawal of federal lands within a 12-mile radius around Chaco Culture National Historical Park. They will protect the area from new federal oil and gas leasing and development. The proposed withdrawal will not apply to individual Indian allotments or to minerals within the area owned by private, state, and tribal entities.
The action will not restrict roads, water lines, and other similar developments. The Chaco Canyon announcement is part of the White House Tribal Nations Summit. Tribal leaders from across the country are taking part in the summit, which is being held virtually Monday and Tuesday. Monday's agenda is focused on policy panels on COVID-19, Native education and language, and public safety. President Biden, the First Lady, and Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland are kicking off the summit. Veterans Affairs and Agriculture are also topics Monday. Tuesday will feature more policy panels and remarks from officials. The latest federal jobs report paints a picture of some economic recovery, but as the Mountain West News Bureau's Robin Vincent reports, Native Americans are overlooked in national economic discussions.
Nearly 40% of Native Americans saw cuts in work hours or pay over the last year. That's higher than all other racial or ethnic groups. These numbers are highlighted in a new Brookings Institution analysis. Raymond Foxworth is with First Nations Development Institute. He co-authored the report.
Native Americans as a group across the country were struggling economically before the pandemic. They had lower than average median incomes, suffered from high rates of unemployment and high rates of food insecurity.
Foxworth points out tribal leaders haven't been consulted about policies that affect them, and it's had a devastating impact. One solution is increasing federal support for Native communities. President Biden's relief packages have earmarked money for this, but Foxworth says given the historical underinvestment in tribal communities, there needs to be more. I'm Robin Vincent.
This summer, the Coquel Indian tribe lost its chief, Don Ivy, from cancer. Now a new leader has been sworn in, as KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
Jason Yonkers, the University of Oregon's assistant vice president and advisor to the president on sovereignty and government-to-government relations, and will balance those duties as the new chief of the Coquel tribe based in Coos Bay. Yonkers says he'll be a voting member of the tribal council, which has many issues to address.
Global warming, because it affects the salmon, which are very precious to us, and pollution that also affects everything around us. We want our tribe and neighbors to be conscious of what took place on this landscape so that we have a historical context to learn from.
Yonker was cousin to Don Ivy, who died in July after a seven-month battle with cancer. Yonker says there's no one who can fill Ivy's shoes, and he regrets the circumstances that led to him taking over as chief. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for nearly 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, presenting the annual Native Cinema Showcase. 47 films representing 39 Native nations in 13 countries, available from November 12th to the 18th on demand at AmericanIndian.si.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, coming to you live from the Allegheny Territory of the Seneca Nation. I'm Brett Mabee. In response to what Pueblo leaders in New Mexico call a marginalization of their history and culture, Native educators created a K-12 grade curriculum based on Pueblo core values. The Indigenous Wisdom curriculum incorporates the history of resistance, colonization, emancipation, cultural integrity, and sovereignty. It's designed to be included in social studies, science, language arts, health, and math lessons. Its creators say the curriculum serves as a counter-narrative to the official presentation of the history of New Mexico. The state has 23 federally recognized tribes, and Native people make up 11% of the population. The project was organized by the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and is part of a growing trend to offer alternatives to the conventional wisdom established by decades of colonized instruction. We'll hear how the curriculum was put together and how teachers and students both can benefit. We'd like to hear from you as well. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. My first guest today, joining us from Albuquerque, is Shannon Romero. She's the Cultural Education Specialist with the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque. She's Cochiti, Santo Domingo, and Navajo. Welcome to Native America Calling today, Shannon.
Thank you for having me.
It's my understanding you didn't necessarily start with, or you weren't on board for the development of the curriculum. However, you've been participating for quite a while now, and I'd like to start with an overview of what the curriculum is and where the idea of the curriculum started.
Sure. First I'd like to kind of get a shout out to our Indigenous Wisdom Curriculum Project team. We have a lead curriculum development and writing team that include Zell Himitiwa, she's Santo Domingo, Dr. Christine Sims, who's Acoma, Dr. Glenabel Martinez, who is Taos and Navajo, and Dr. Natalie Martinez, who is Laguna. Some of the goals of our curriculum include that, this is a curriculum that will help K-12 teachers educate their students about the factors and conditions that shape the key relationships, both government to government, community to community, culture to culture, and person to person. And this is throughout historical periods of turmoil and peaceful coexistence. And so I believe this curriculum really got started around a little bit earlier than 2014, during the Pueblo Convocation, I believe, were the first kind of talks about developing a curriculum that's written by Pueblo teachers and teacher advocates. And what they did was they sought out grant money through the Kellogg Foundation. They were able to get funded to write their curriculum in 2014, which included elementary lessons. We have 8 lessons in elementary, we have middle school, 10 lessons, and then in high school, we have 27 lessons. And so the teachers really felt that it was time that the Pueblo perspective was really included into the classroom, especially into our Native American classes, our students that we have in our classrooms. They're not represented. And so By developing this curriculum, it gave voice not only to the students and the Native teachers in our state, but also it also allows non-Native teachers and non-Native students to learn about the Pueblo history from our own perspective and not from a non-Pueblo perspective, is what we usually get.
What are some of the reasons a curriculum like this from a Pueblo perspective is needed?
I'm sorry. So the context of this curriculum, it serves as a counter narrative to the presentation of the history of New Mexico presented in our schools today. And so at the center of the curriculum are concepts and core values that have operated as vehicles for resistance, emancipation, and transformation for Pueblo people as part of maintaining our culture, our integrity, and exercising our sovereignty, you know, all in the face of colonizing measures taken by Spain, Mexico, and the United States.
So needless to say, there was a lot lacking in the present curriculum at that time.
Definitely, and I myself am a product of Albuquerque Public Schools, and one thing that I saw as a Native student was that I was never included in the textbook. Native American history was limited to learning about during Thanksgiving, and it would be only a brief, maybe one or two paragraphs, that would not include an accurate perspective of Pueblo students or even Native students that live in the Southwest.
It certainly seems like, I can relate with this as well. Growing up, you mentioned seeing maybe a couple paragraphs, a chapter at most, and it's usually the highlights, and it's way overgeneralized. And I think something that the non-Indigenous listener needs to understand is that these histories need to account for the geography from which they're born, right? I mean, we ought to be learning a little bit more of Haudenosaunee history up in New York, and down in your neck of the woods, you should absolutely be learning more about the Pueblo Nations, right?
Definitely. There's people that are born and raised in New Mexico that have no idea about our history, our Indigenous peoples that were here since time immemorial. They have no idea about even those who had been in the Long Walk down in Bosque Redondo. They have no idea about the history that has occurred here and how it affects us Indigenous people today, how it affects us not being reflected accurately in schools, in the text, and in the curriculum.
What are some of the challenges that the Indigenous Wisdom Project has faced in trying to implement some of these changes and introduce some of the education for teachers even?
Well, I wouldn't say so much as we have faced a lot of challenges. I think the most challenges for us is our core team are teachers. They're out there teaching at University of New Mexico or at NACA. So they're in room. So trying to find that balance between being able to do their day job and then helping us with our project and training teachers, I think that's one of the biggest struggles that we have. That and, of course, funding for our project. But we've been doing the best we can to offer teachers guidance in how to use our curriculum, with giving professional development opportunities to teachers, either in Zoom or in person. So I think that we've been overcoming a lot of our challenges, which is a blessing.
Well, most definitely. Joining us on the line right now is Shannon Romero, the Cultural Education Specialist with the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque. We're discussing the Indigenous Wisdom Project that was implemented back in 2014, and we want to hear from you. Have you experienced similar kinds of scenarios as to what we've been talking about, or rather, have you noticed the absence of Indigenous representation in the textbooks? You're welcome to give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out to us on our Facebook page at Native America Calling as well.
Shannon, before we head back to break in a few minutes, I want to follow up with the extent of the teacher training that you mentioned. So what is the extent? How long does it take? And are there different study areas as well? Like is math, science, and physical education, are they all separate study areas?
That's a long question. So how am I going to answer this?
What we
do is we provide training to all teachers, no matter what their role is in the school, whether they're an EA, whether they're a PE teacher, whether they're a counselor or administrator. We offer everybody the opportunity to learn about this curriculum. And so there are even lessons in our high school unit in health that a PE teacher could use, for instance, about movement, about resiliency, about the Pueblo Revolt. And so there's many ways to kind of tweak these lessons and kind of implement them into your classroom.
Interesting. Shannon, you mentioned the long walk. What else might a student learn about that they might not otherwise?
The long walk is really more of Diné history. But what they would learn in our curriculum are lessons like pathways to wisdom through family and community. One of the lessons I really love is a Science K-1 lesson by Tricia McKino called Pueblo Creation Story, Our Awe-Inspiring Cosmos. And so really talking about not only our living things, but the sun, the moon, the earth, the animals, everything that encompasses our world. We also have an awesome elementary lesson written by Azel Matiwa, which is called Martin and Miguel, A Comparison of Two Heroes. And so we often hear about Martin Luther King and what he did peacefully to bring about change. But we often don't hear about Miguel Trujillo, who is also a Pueblo leader and helped the Native Americans get their right to vote. And so things like learning about these topics,
Shannon,
really help.
Oh, I hate to interrupt you. We do have to head to a quick break. I want to pick this right back up in just a few. Do you have a comment or question for today's show? Call in at 1-800-996-2848. We'll be right back after this quick break. Pervasive and long-standing structural inequities contributed to a disproportionately high rate of COVID-19 infections among Native people. That's the conclusion of research published by the Cambridge University Press. We'll get both an academic look and a ground-level assessment of COVID protections on the next Native America Calling.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you there are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. You may choose which COVID-19 vaccine you receive as a booster shot. Getting the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. We're discussing a K-12 curriculum designed by Native educators in the state of New Mexico. The lessons offer a Pueblo perspective to history, culture, and other subjects. This curriculum is available at no cost on the website of the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center, which oversees the project. And you're always welcome to join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before bringing my next guest on, I do want to just finish up with a few more questions for Shannon Reed, who's she is involved with this project as the cultural education specialist with the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. And Shannon, when we went to break, and I rudely interrupted you, you were talking a little bit about a few of the lessons that one might to experience. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish up that train of thought.
Oh, certainly. Thank you for giving me some more time. I was wanting to just point out some of the lessons that you could find in our curriculum. And so I had mentioned a lesson, a science lesson, K-1, talking about our cosmos. And then we also have another social studies 4-5 lesson, which talks about Martin and Miguel, the comparison of two heroes. And for those that maybe not know about Pueblo culture and about our canes, there's a really excellent middle school language arts lesson called Life of Pueblo People, written by my good friend Laura Jingles. And she talks about the Pueblo canes and how the leadership kind of turns over what the Pueblo canes are and how they came about. And she's written this wonderful story based on her grandfather and based on experiences that she had in her Pueblo growing up. But another lesson that I really wanted to highlight is called the Pueblo Code Talkers, written by Dr. Christine Sims. And so most people, when they hear about Code Talkers, they hear about the Navajo Code Talkers. But there are two Pueblo Code Talkers. And so I encourage you to download our curriculum, look what we have to offer, because I'm sure you'd be amazed by a full range of lessons that you can share with your students, that you can share with parents and students and the community that talk about our different areas in history.
Once more, where can people find more information about the curriculum, ma'am?
Yes, you would look on our website at the end of Pueblo.org. You could look in the search button and enter Indigenous Wisdom Curriculum. I'm sorry, Indigenous Wisdom Project, and then you can. It'll take you to this page and ask if you want to download the curriculum. And so this is free for anybody who wants to download. There's also an option to get contacted, and if you press yes for being contacted, we will put you on our list and let you know about trainings that we have in the future.
Thank you very much for your insights and your dedication to this important cause and helping to set the record straight. It's an important phase in the redirecting of the miseducation on Indigenous people. So I thank you so much for your input, Shannon. Joining us from Albuquerque is Treva Riley. She's a physical education teacher and coach with Laguna Pueblo Schools and is from the Pueblos of Laguna and Ecama. Welcome to Native America Calling, Treva.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Brett. It's good to be here.
I'm glad we could catch up a little bit about your involvement on this important project today. And, well, let's start there. I was wondering if you could give listeners a little bit of a background on how you came on board with this.
Yes, sir. So I was invited during the summertime by one of my mentors, Dr. Natalie Martinez, and she had stumbled upon my YouTube channel that we have for our Laguna kiddos here at the elementary school. And so she was really the one that invited me to revise some curriculum for them that they had wrote prior. And so in doing that, they invited me to come on board and become a new author in the areas of health and wellness. So I was able to develop two unit plans, one for the high school level and one for the middle school level.
So essentially, you were kind of already about this work before the actual initiative started, right?
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more on why you decided to start the YouTube channel and develop this curriculum at Laguna Elementary.
Yes. So our YouTube channel came about during our COVID year, our pandemic year. We went totally remote last year, and we were still trying to figure out how are we going to get curriculum out to our kiddos, me being a PE teacher. So they gave me the freedom to develop on-demand videos. And so I was like, oh, let's use YouTube. I watch it all the time, you know, tutorials on cooking and doing all kind of fun activities. And I had already seen some PE channels being developed over time. And that's how we got started. Me and my aunt, she's a librarian here, started out with dances And then we moved on to exercises and playing different games. We also had our middle school teacher, Michelle Herrera, be involved with her students. So we were very much catering to our elementary kids as well as our middle school population. But we just kept going that entire year. We were able to develop 85 videos and to get our kids involved and stay connected.
And in what ways were you able to indigenize, quote unquote, some of these lessons in the curriculum?
We really, we focused on those core values. And core values, they're so dear to my heart. It reminds me of my grandparents. They always taught us to have love, respect, joy, compassion, faith, and balance within our lives. And so I bring that into my classroom, into the unit plans. This is our focus for today. Remember that we're radiating love for self, but also for others. We're respecting one another. We're helping each other. And I feel like this is necessary within a classroom setting, whether you're native or non-native, just to have those values in place to remind us where we need to go and how we need to be within our classroom. Having that mission statement posted somewhere, about family. I remind my kids we're brothers and sisters. We're like a household. When we enter the gym, we're here to help one another. So I think just bringing in those values from our household, but also as Pueblo people, we really look into those core values to help us remember who we are as a people.
When I posed the question to Shannon about whether these lessons are separate, for instance, in math and physical education, she said that quite often you can pull from one or the other and kind of reinforce that in another area. Now, a lot of Western education does like to keep things in nice, neat little compartments, but are you also finding the ease with which you can incorporate lessons from one area into another as well?
Absolutely. I mean, we're doing that right now in PE. We are co-curricular. Just this morning, we did some movement physical activity with math integration. We were doing multiplication, and the kids had to solve some answers. Based on their answer, they were able to do the exercise that went along with that answer. So we're able to blend different like math, spelling, reading, science, if you will. We're able to combine the two and really have that, share that with the kids, that we're not all separate. We're all together. We can connect different values and different lessons and have them spill into the other. So those are one of the things that I'm working on as an educator, is not only teaching kiddos how to move, but also what else can we incorporate? And I have this belief that if we can do that, we can instill their beliefs within that core.
Treva, let's come back to this train of thought in just a few. I want to once again extend an invitation out there that you're welcome to join our conversation. You're listening to Native America Calling. We want to hear from you today. And you're welcome to call in at 1-800-996-2848. As a matter of fact, we're going to go to the lines right now. Calling in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM is Fidel, and he'd like to share some thoughts on introducing science fundamentals. You're on Native America Calling, Fidel. It's all yours.
Well, thank you very much. This is tangent to what you just talked about. You mentioned about some degree of compartmentalization, but at the same time, the other caller mentioned about the incorporation of math in physical education. And with this in mind, I think when it applies to education, as an educator myself, what this implies is that when we talk about our indigenous ancestors, not just our Pueblos and North American indigenous peoples, but all those indigenous groups of people who lived in the Western Hemisphere before colonization occurred, is that without science and without math, none of these civilizations would have existed. Because when we think about why these cultures existed, we have one very good example of why they did, and that answer is corn. And it's through hybridization, human intervention, and certainly biology, that corn was the predominant commodity throughout the Western Hemisphere. And by the time the Pilgrim migrants came to Massachusetts, corn was being there. And it was through human development and science that we have specific commodities that only existed in the Western Hemisphere, such as corn, beans, squash, potatoes, tomatoes, cocoa, tobacco, plantains, avocados, peanuts, just to name a few. All of those commodities now that we have pretty much throughout the world required human intervention, but in addition to that, they required science. And today, even today, corn is the number one commodity that is exported by the United States and China. And corn is used in just about everything we use. We put it in our gasoline, the ethanol that helps us in the wintertime. And if you go to a grocery store today, you pick up any food commodity there and look at the ingredients. At some point, some commodities, majority of those commodities always include corn. So that's what science has contributed to as it applies only to food. But then when you think about places like Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde, Canyon de Chelly, and many other places throughout the Western Hemisphere, to build those structures, that requires what we now call as architectural physics. And so science has always been an elemental part of all those civilizations that existed here. And we teach this constructs to fifth graders. But it's through those concepts and constructs that many indigenous peoples throughout the Western Hemisphere incorporated. That's why they existed the way they did even before Europeans came. So it's exactly what Shannon said initially, how science and education can be incorporated into not just to Native students, but to all students, but at the same time, give credit to those indigenous forebearers. It's through their creativity and through, most importantly, as the most important question we can ask in science is why? Why does this happen? Why does this do that? And it's through that process of problem solving, process improvement, systems management, that many of those civilizations existed simply because of questioning and asking and then subsequently trying to address those issues.
Fadela, I can't thank you enough for your contributions to the conversation. We'll make sure we get your information as well in case we ever need to bring you back on the show. Well, one of the things that I was impressed upon, your emphasis on how important corn has been in the development of the modern world. I'd like to take that a step further and say that the modern world absolutely would not be possible without that indigenous contribution of corn. And you hit on another important point in discussing that, you know, these contributions have always been there. Now, a part of that process is just reclaiming the credit where credit is due. Shannon, at what point in putting this project together did you realize exactly what you had on your hands?
So I came onto the team here at IPCC about 2018, but prior to that, I was at the APS Indian Education Department, and I remember them getting training back in 2014 with this curriculum, and I just thought it was just the most exciting thing that a curriculum was developed by actual Pueblo people with a Pueblo perspective. And so I just thought that was really awesome, and I couldn't wait to learn more. And so when I came onto the team, I was able to start developing a project, which took our curriculum kind of to that next step of now we have this curriculum, so let's get this out there for teachers to utilize in their classrooms. And so starting these professional development trainings and opportunities for teachers in the state was something that I thought was extremely vital, and it was time, especially with the House Bill 250, the Yazzie Martinez case. It was time.
For the casual listener out there, Shannon, and we got to head back to break here in a few minutes, I was wondering if you could just explain a little bit more what that Yazzie Martinez case is about.
So I guess basically the case really looked at a few demographics, Native Americans, second language speakers, homeless students. There's a range of students that were getting the necessary education that they should have been receiving. And so part of that House Bill 250 is really providing quality professional development opportunities to include Indigenous curriculum into the classroom, and also having teachers utilize these new lessons and into their classroom, so making it available to them, offering these training programs to these teachers so that they can start utilizing them.
There's still plenty of time to join our conversation today. You're welcome to call 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Every day we tackle issues from a Native viewpoint, and you're welcome to tune into this station at this time every weekday. You can also head to NativeAmericaCalling.com to find a station near you. You can also listen live anywhere on the world online at NativeVoice1.org. If you'd like to listen to any of our past shows, you can find the studio archive by searching for Native America Calling on SoundCloud.com. We still have a lot more time to discuss this important curriculum, this educational curriculum put together by the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. We got to take a quick break. Be right back after this. I'm your host, Brett Mabee.
Cliche, life's an adventure, but your health shouldn't be. Check out open enrollment options November 1st through January 15th. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Elahqua.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. There's still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I also wanted to throw out there that in case you are feeling a little on the shy side, I don't blame you. I sound a little intimidating, more so than I actually am, though. My bark is much bigger than my bite. However, if you are feeling shy, you're welcome to check us out on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And don't forget, we'll get your comments on the air. You can post a pic on Instagram at Native America Calling as well. Joining us from Albuquerque is Treva Riley. She's a physical education teacher and coach with Laguna Pueblo Schools and is from the Pueblos of Laguna and Acoma. Well, welcome back to Native America Calling, Treva. When we were, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about how these curriculum, these lesson plans can be kind of go in and out. They can weave in and out of other subjects as well. And we've spent a lot of our conversation kind of talking about the importance on educating, educators, helping to facilitate that process so they can have a leg up as well. But I want to shift our focus just a little bit to the benefits that this has, obviously, for the students from a cultural standpoint as well.
Yes, thank you again for having me. And yeah, and I was thinking about that as well. I mean, overall wellness, when we think of the word wellness, of course, different ideas come to our mind. But one that really sticks with me is oneness and wholeness, completeness, being one with ourselves. And I think from a Pueblo standpoint, one of the unit plans that I wrote was healing or wellness through running and dancing, through prayer, storytelling, and maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And I feel that we don't focus a lot on the different components of wellness, our mental, emotional, physical, and our spiritual state. A lot of the times we're solely focused on physical. How can I be stronger? How can I get more fit? Especially in this social media day and age, and a lot of it is our feelings, our thoughts from the inside out. And so those are some of the things that I feel that our kids can benefit, is knowing how they feel and knowing that their feelings affect their thoughts and their thoughts affect their actions, what they say, what they do, and how they choose their life, the choices that they make. And so I think that's going to help us with stressful situations. I know kids are having a tough time these days. How do I handle certain situations? How do I express my feelings in a healthy way? And to let them know that it's okay to feel, you know, sad and down, but how can I express that without feeling, you know, in shame or guilty about the way that they feel? So I think those are some benefits that we could learn from indigenizing our curriculum, helping them to understand their spiritual beings and that they're working from the inside out.
It really helps to reinforce not only some of the elements that are necessary for students to learn in the modern world, but it also helps to reinforce that cultural identity on a daily basis. Yeah, there's no separation anymore between the two, the modern world and the traditional world.
I agree, yes. We did grow up, you know, learning separate. And once you separate things, then it creates division. And it kind of confuses, you know, well, which way is the right way and which way is the way to go? Is it culture? Is it another type of religion or, you know, math, science? But really, it's when you can learn to bring them together, it's all that oneness. It's creating balance and harmony and learning to see that we're all different, but we're still, you know, brothers and sisters. At the end of the day, we're still family. And we're able to use our uniqueness to come together and move forward as a people.
You hit on so much in just that one statement right there. And even, I'd like to take that a step further and say, even having to force that choice is detrimental to the cultural health for future generations as well, yeah?
Yes. Yes, I agree with that. I mean, my grandfather and grandmother talk about the boarding schools and how that created separateness from our culture, you know, being punished for speaking our language and dances and whatnot too. I think it's knowing your history and it's knowing what our ancestors have went through and learning from that. We don't have to repeat and go through the whole cycle again, but it's learning how can we be better and how can we move forward together and teaching our kids that, you know, everybody is different, but we still can embrace each other and celebrate that.
Do you have a comment or question for today's show? There's still time to get in on the conversation. You can call on at 1-800-996-2848. You can also email us at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. I do actually want to go to the lines here in just a minute, but Treva, just following up on that last question, or kind of this particular train of thought, we're talking about the students in this block, and we're talking about how beneficial it is for them. How have the students at your school responded thus far when you incorporate Pueblo wisdom into the classroom?
They've really responded really, really good. I believe in the beginning we talked about having a mission statement. Our school has a mission statement where we embrace all cultures. We embrace not just our own, but we embrace every culture that we learn about, whether, you know, it's Asian, Hispanic, you know, we're embracing all of that and we're trying to understand to have greater perspective. So I think when your mission plan aligns with your own classroom mission, the kids get that and they're like, oh, you know, our core values are love. Our core values are respect and joy. And so we want to keep that as our focal point, that we're going to always have fun, we're going to always embrace each other, celebrate, encourage, support. And that's how I see my kiddos grow. You know, they're more willing to help each other out. They're more willing to be gentle and a little bit more kinder on themselves, not afraid to make mistakes and fail, but to know that it's okay because that's how we learn and that's how we grow. So really, those core values are what holds our classroom together.
Most definitely. Treva, we're going to bring in a caller at this time. Listening in Yakima, Washington on KYNR is Bruce. He's an educator and has some thoughts on the science curriculum as well. Welcome to Native America Calling, Bruce.
Well, thank you for this moment to share my many decades of teaching. I am now a very retired teacher in my 70s, but I seem to be more rehired into the love of learning and experience. And I'm having a lot of fun being a senior. Now, from my very earliest childhood, I had a period of years where I was able to bond uniquely and intensively with nature because of being near a forested area and having a very trusted dog as my partner. From that experience, I was very bonded with texture, with the senses of the natural world. And I didn't just sit and look at a tree or look at a bush. I was engaged physically in touching, smelling, climbing, moving, so forth. You know, just being embedded in all of the things about the natural science. Going into my young adult years, I trained in botany and chemistry and got my degree in those areas. And I used the same principles there in working with children as a VISTA volunteer when I was on a Native American assignment campus at the Shoshone Nation. I emphasized the senses, the sight, the smell, the touch. Physically being involved in a science display in the classroom, but not only just seeing it, but incorporating many of the sensory types of ideas. This was a wonderful situation for me because my students realized that smelling and touching, hearing, seeing science was a wonderful experience. You know, and young children, preschool through the primary grades, are very natural at scientists. They're sort of like the destined scientists because they're so focused on what they can touch and smell and see and experience. And I've taken that to some extent into other areas of adult education over the years. And, you know, for instance, I'm a Salmon in the Classroom project teacher here in two locations in Central Washington. And we just don't talk about eggs in a tank and elephant in a tank and salmon fry in a tank. We go out and experience the environment where the salmon migrate into, the watershed, the plants, the soil, the rocks, and we visit hatcheries. I really like a lot of what I'm hearing here because it sounds like the science isn't just a book. It is a real day-to-day living experience.
I agree 100%, Bruce. Just a quick little anecdote that I wanted to share. When it came time to talking with my sons about the future of their education, I kind of repeated something that an elder had said to me in good faith. She meant full well in saying this, but she said, you have to decide what it is that you want your kids to be someday. And this kind of ties back in with what Treva and Shannon are talking about as well. Like this idea of choosing between the cultural world or the modern world. And I kind of got mad at myself because that question didn't go quite as planned. Well, my son says, well, I want to be a scientist someday, so I think I'll stay here. And I kind of, you know, smacking myself on the forehead, and, you know, why'd you do that? And I had to revisit real quickly, and I said, all right, you want to be a scientist someday, you can do that, but you're going to bring these words with you. You're going to bring these traditions with you because all of science is built upon these observations of the natural world around us. All scientific innovation comes from that relationship of understanding how the world around us works. So, Bruce, I can't thank you enough for incorporating those hands-on types of lessons as well and helping the science to come to life because there shouldn't even be a separation as far as that goes as well. I do want to try and get another caller on. And Treva, hang tight. I have a few more questions for you as well. At this time, we want to head on over to Rosebud, South Dakota, listening in on KOYA. He's has some thoughts on incorporating art education. Welcome to Native America Calling today, Anthony.
Hello. I'm Alakhu Belu. I'm a retired teacher also. I taught language, the Lakota language. I also taught Lakota music, also the arts. So that's what I'm really wanting to, I think the arts is the most important to learn about the way of life that the people have lived and how to construct certain things like the moccasins and the regalias and the shields, the teepee and all that. We need to learn about the arts of that to maintain our culture and for our tribes.
Most definitely. That art is that expression more often than not in some of these observations. I love to learn about the way that these teachings are encapsulated in the art. So again, I think you have an excellent argument for saying that that has to, all of these subjects kind of bleed into each other or entangle with one another. And I think that's one of the themes that we're talking about today, is this holistic approach to education. We're going to be out of time before we know it, so I want to bring my attention back to Treva for just a few. Now, let's talk. Let's rewind a little bit and talk about the Laguna Elementary YouTube channel. Are these lessons available for the public?
Yes, sir. They're available. If you go into YouTube and you type in the search bar Laguna Physical Education, our link should pop up, and there's a little icon that says I love PE with a nice big red heart on there. And you'll see our mascot, the Brave, as our wallpaper. So yeah, they are available.
Thank you so much. One last question for you, Treva. How can other schools incorporate an Indigenous health and wellness perspective in their curriculum?
I believe they can incorporate this by, well, number one, learning, and just being open to learning in general. I think we're all learners, students, and we're all teachers. You know, you're never too old to learn, and you're never too young to teach, and we're constantly learning back and forth from each other. But I think of just learning from others, asking questions, you know, especially depends on what area you're in. I know in New Mexico, we're heavily populated with Pueblo cultures here, and just asking questions is a good start. And how can I bring this in to my school? How can I recruit help from my community? And maybe inviting the elders to come in. They're always looking for opportunity, storytelling, maybe telling about their past, how they grew up, what values were instilled within them and their families. You know, and I'm sure they're more than willing to share that with us. And also the language piece as well, involving different people that know the language, depending on what you want to pull in. And then just having that mission statement, that vision, you know, what do you want to see your kids doing? And what is it like? What are your hopes and your dreams, your goals for them? Because really, this is what we design the curriculum for, is for our future generation.
Treva, thank you so much for your insight today. I want to thank our callers as well. I want to thank Shannon as well. We've officially reached the end of the hour. A few things to keep in mind for today's show is, well, we are indigenizing the curriculum a little bit more, and I think we're going to see things like this pop up more and more throughout Turtle Island as well. I know that's at the forefront of our conversations right here in Haudenosaunee lands as well. And it is important for helping to complete the picture of our identity as well. Once again, we've officially reached the end of the hour. I'd like to say thank you to our guests, Shannon Romero and Treva Riley. Join us tomorrow for a discussion about research suggesting policy decisions and structural inequities contributed to higher than usual COVID-19 infection rates on Native nations. Once again, Wesot Nyawe, thank you so much. I'm Brett Mamie.
Keshe, istan kohotellaan ahoitudella kvahon aijujanava me. Uus is open enrollment options November 1st on January 15th and asti tona onko takken wetsi telakenava. Jämto takua mos avashua tu esadaptonis healthcare.gov fin awana esadaptonis 1-800-318-2596 sampeden akenaptu. Lukke Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services tona pene itolohkenave. Elahkwa.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.